Keep It is brought to you by Factor.
I, Louis Fertel, may just be a man, but I am a man completely powered by two things, trivia and Factor. Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make it easy to eat well. Their meals are dietitian-approved and ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes. Or if you tell time like me, two Marion Cotillard acceptance speeches.
With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. And Factor can also help you reach your wellness goals with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-ons. And as a woman on the go in this baby boom we call life, I love a grab-and-go snack.
Did you just reference Baby Boom with Diane Keaton?
Yes.
I love the convenience of Factor. I can eat one of those meals and have a lovely afternoon, or eat 7 of them, as I sometimes do, if I want a lot of protein at once. Because as you know, muscle pageant season is right around the corner, and I am not going to let those Croatians beat me. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use code FACTORPODCAST to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
And we're back for an all-new episode of Keep It. It is the Oscars palooza, as they say.
Famous expression.
No one says that.
They should stop saying it if they're saying it.
I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. And yes, this is our 8th Oscars episode of Keep It, put me in the grave. Put me in the friggin' grave. But we'll get into the ceremony, et cetera. But first of all, we have to talk about Mr. Gene Hackman, who died this week at the age of 95, except that's not all. This situation, if you're familiar with the death, his wife was also found dead. She's like 30 years younger than he was. And then their dog was also found dead. And initially, we heard that there was no carbon monoxide involvement. But anyway, there should not be this much intrigue with the death of Gene Hackman, a 95-year-old actor who could have just passed away and we would have been all like, what a great life. But instead, it is attached to this strange, intriguing tale. And it's one of those things like that movie last year, Anatomy of a Fall, where truly all of the scenarios you could spell out feel like they're wrong. Like, we're going to find out whatever happened and I'm not going to believe it.
Yeah, I feel bad that like everything was swirling through my brain. I was like, is this a Phil Hartman situation? Like, that's the first thing that hit me.
Yeah. No, like, why would two people be dead and in different rooms? You know, well, just like, what is happening that they both dropped dead? Anyway, I'm not good at even speculating about this kind of thing, but I will say, Gene Hackman, if you just said straight up Gene Hackman's your favorite actor, I don't think anybody could deny the legitimacy of that. 100 different roles that have nothing to do with each other. What he does in Unforgiven has nothing to do with what he does in Heartbreakers. Or my favorite Gene Hackman movie, which is called Twice in a Lifetime, which is this family drama from the 80s, where he's married to Ellen Burstyn, and they have a sort of placid suburban existence, and then he starts getting with Anne Margaret, and who wouldn't? And it's just about like divorce and families moving on and stuff. It is such an underrated movie. There's a nominated performance from Amy Madigan in it, but that's one of the rare cases of a movie where the worst performance in it is the nominee.
I can name a few.
Oh, yeah. Because sometimes they just pick the loudest performance. I'm talking about you, Mark Wahlberg in The Departed.
Talking about you, Jamie Lee Curtis.
No kidding. Well, at least in that case, other people were nominated too, but.
Yeah. Gene Hackman, I'm glad you started off with Heartbreakers because that is cinema, by the way.
The laughs are fucking real in that. Sigourney Weaver just said, actually, I'm going to go balls to the wall. Every once in a while, she's clearly having a good time on screen. It happens about once every 4 roles.
When I think about a Gene Hackman film that I love, obviously, I am a Superman fan. You know, I think like the first Superman.
Oh, that does sound like you.
Yeah. You know, did you know I like those superheroes, the comic books?
Yeah, right.
The funniest.
What's wrong with you? I meant to ask that. Yeah.
Honestly. The funnies. Side note, I miss reading those, okay? I think that our nation was better when we had not just newspapers, but when I was reading Superman and Spider-Man just like every day in my grandmother's newspaper, okay? I was also reading Mary Worth, seeing what old bitch was up to.
The Family Circus, one panel.
You hate The Family Circus, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I would read all that stuff. Rhymes with Orange. Like, I can go back and back. Brenda Starr.
Yeah. But Superman, and then obviously, you're right in that, like, all these roles are so unlike each other. Because if you want to start out with the beginning greats, like, The French Connection, you know? And you, like the Poseidon Adventure. And then you jump to Young Frankenstein. I mean, and The Conversation. These are films that happen within, like, 4 years of each other. And they're all four different movies.
No, and also he's somebody who, when he hit as an actor, the string of completely unrelated awesome movies just began and didn't stop. Like, he was in Bonnie and Clyde, and then not long after was in the fabulous I Never Sang for My Father with Melvin Douglas, very underrated, also a two-time Oscar-winning actor. And then The French Connection, which I think is still maybe the definitive action movie of the 70s. You have things like Marathon Man and Jaws is a thriller, but like an action movie, I think you would still probably pick The French Connection as the, and it's obviously a Best Picture winner too. But no, he's such a reliable on-screen presence, and also so exactly the epicenter of what we watched in the 70s. Just an intense actor who we watched him think on screen a lot. He was a very intense person, and you could register his just extreme intellect as he would navigate a scene. And of course, I think his best movie is The Conversation, which is 1974, Francis Ford Coppola. He also made Godfather Part II that year. But that is, and I say this with affection for my girl Jane in Clute, but the best paranoid thriller, where he's listening to a tape of a conversation again and again and again and having to solve what it is. He has to basically figure out what's going on in this conversation. Cindy Williams from Laverne and Shirley is in it. And you are right there with him. It's a detective story that's very unusual. And every time I carry audio equipment around, like I'm going to go fly somewhere and I need to carry my audio equipment for this podcast, I feel like Gene Hackman in The Conversation.
If I'm thinking about one of my favorite Gene Hackman films, I mean, it's probably The Royal Tenenbaums for me.
Of course, yes.
You know, I mean, that when that movie first came out, the introduction to, you know, some people had seen Bottle Rocket, obviously, but I mean, the introduction to Wes Anderson into culture with that movie is just so, like, unparalleled for just like a new director with a, you know, very bold idea, but also just a visual style of his own. And I think that when that movie came out, you know, that became so many people's favorite film immediately. And still is to this day.
Well, and also, talk about a director who stuck to an aesthetic. I mean, he said, yes. I'm going to give it to you again. And here it comes again. And by the way, I'm back again.
Wes Anderson brings it to you every ball, okay?
Yeah, right. And also, just there's something about the pauses in Wes Anderson's work and like what he gets out of actors. Like you just get a new sort of droll, whimsical quality from performers you didn't think would otherwise give that. Like Gwyneth in that movie is unlike anything she did in any other movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to give you another film of his that I love, which is The Firm, because you know I love Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah, right.
And two films that you might not expect from me, but my grandmother was a big Western fan. And so I have seen The Quick and the Dead so many times, and also Unforgiven.
Unforgiven. No, I think I did a list recently. You can find this video on our YouTube channel of the 10 best Oscar-winning performances of the 90s. And I, for as a special mention, had to bring up Gene Hackman at number 11 in Unforgiven. But woof! I mean, like, half the power in that movie is what he brings to that role, the dastardliness.
Yeah, I mean, Yellowstone, got nothing on that. But no. I will say, I missed that sort of early 90s era of cowboy movies, like the renaissance for cowboy films. I feel like they were really good, and we really haven't captured that again in American cinema.
Or even really revisited those, you know?
Yeah, I feel like when we did revisit cowboy films, it was sort of, they were sort of really goofy. Like the mid-2000s cowboy films, they were very, what are we doing here?
Also, there was even a all-lady cowboy movie. And then
Bad Girls?
Yes. God damn it, you knew about Bad Girls? I was all ready to educate. We made Andy McDowell do all sorts of crazy things.
Bad Girls, Unforgiven. Like these movies were on display on Bobby Sherrod's shelf, okay? These were the VHSs that raised me.
Yeah, okay. I actually wish we got more of a moment about him at the Oscars, something more extended. But this leads into my problem. Several people were disturbed with the In Memoriam this year at the Oscars, and just who they said didn't make it, like Michelle Trachtenberg, who just passed away tragically over the past week.
That was nasty work.
No, but I'll say this, though. Is she really a movie actress? I mean, you got to draw the line somewhere.
Harriet the Spy, honey. 17 again.
Okay, two films. Agreed.
Children were watching these movies, okay?
Yes, right.
At weddings, graduations, and funerals in the other room, so the adults weren't disturbed.
Right, the adults could grieve on their own. I want to give a shout-out to Jim Abrams, the writer and director of Airplane and The Naked Gun, who is not in the In Memoriam reel. I mean, can you get any higher in comedy than those two franchises? I mean, it truly the ne plus ultra of comedy. I would say Airplane is the undisputed most revered comedy of the past 50 years. And I know there are Annie Hall stands out there, and I will fight them.
The ne plus ultra, monsieur. Oh, oui, oui,
oui. Honey, come back to school. Yes, did I go to the University of Iowa? Yes. It is a school of the state.
Speaking of Woody Allen, you know, our girl. What do you think of Another Woman, the Gene Hackman film?
Oh, excuse me. Another Woman is my favorite Woody Allen movie.
Okay.
It is a very short movie. It's like 78 minutes or something. It stars Jenna Rollins. And you get into her. She's with Gene Hackman in the movie. It's sort of a minor role for him. But
it's very The Conversation. She overhears something.
Everything is overheard in this movie. Yeah, that's the whole drama. Mia Farrow's in it. But my girl Sandy Dennis has a two-minute role in that. And she smokes Jenna Rollins in that scene.
Oh. Closing
and I
night.
Think of them as fighting, just in general. Great movie. Literally my favorite Woody Allen movie. You should watch it.
All right, well, we've got the Oscars to get to, and yes. We also have the fantastic Brenda Song joining us this week.
Oh, my God, what a ball of fire. Much like Barbara Stanwyck nominated in 1941.
Yeah. Too bad we interviewed her before Kieran Culkin, her brother-in-law, won his Oscar this week, because I want to know what's going on in that family with all these requests for children.
Yeah, right. You just asked for them? It's like, yeah, you submitted in writing, I guess.
It's like the contract scene in 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, my God. Remember that franchise? Remember Rita Ora?
Every day.
Right.
All right. We will be right back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Built. Lewis, we both know that I am a child of God.
Oh, sure.
But did you also know that I'm a child of destiny?
Bugaboo, what? And how did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I got bills, bills, bills.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah, and one of those bills is rent. And for everyone else who pays rent, you need to start jumping to Built. Built lets you earn points on rent payments, and those points can be used toward flights, hotel stays, fitness classes, and even your next rent payment, and you don't even have to check in with your landlord to sign up. Lewis, why don't you break it down for the soldiers?
There's no cost to join Built, and as a member, you'll earn valuable points on rent and on your everyday spending. Built points can be transferred to your favorite hotels and airlines, and even the ones you haven't heard of. There are over 500 airlines and 700,000 hotels and properties around the world you can redeem your Built points toward. Points can also be redeemed towards a future rent payment and unique experiences that only Built members can access. So if you're not earning points on rent, my question is, why not?
Start earning points on rent you're already paying by going to joinbuilt.com/keepit. That's joinbilt.com/keepit. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you. Joinbuilt.com/keepit to start earning points on your rent payments today. Sunday was the 97th Oscars, officially closing out one of the most controversial award seasons in years. Hollywood's biggest night was hosted by Conan O'Brien and dominated by Anora. There were tributes, obnoxious speeches, and musical numbers, few of them good. And now we'll get into all of it, I guess starting with the host with the most.
Miss Conan O'Brien, the reddest, palest girl in the game. I love, it's her versus the Wendy's logo. One of them can win. First of all, I just want to say, I love Conan. I don't think there's anything, such thing as working in late night and not loving Conan O'Brien. I think something specific I love about him in the case of hosting the Oscars is, and this has always been true about him, he is not for everyone. Like, he is, I think he is smart, silly in a way that registers to a lot of people as just weird or quote unquote, they don't get it. But watching him, just the high level of intelligence he brings and sincerity, and of course that like well of kind of Irish darkness that's at the heart of how he performs, all that together, I love seeing on the Oscar stage. And apparently he had been testing out this material for weeks. He literally even went to Akbar, which is the big gay bar on the east side of LA that Ira and I have been to 25,000 times. In fact, I probably met Ira at Akbar. He tried it out at a stand-up night there. So he cared what like the queens were thinking about this monologue.
Oh, okay. Come on, Conan.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Did he do it at Learn the Words, Bitch?
Yeah, he got up there and did Ava Max... Kings and Queens, and then said, by the way, I'm hosting the Oscars. Let me rehearse this.
Obviously, I'm a huge Conan O'Brien fan. I feel like, for me, this ceremony, for being such a controversial award season, like one of the most controversial in forever, right? Thanks to our homegirl, Carla Sofia Gascon.
Who arrived at the Oscars on, I believe, her own Lime scooter. I don't know how else she got there. Wasn't a Netflix car, girl.
On a motorcycle, just like Lana Del Rey at Coachella.
No, like the great Gonzo, just like jumping into the ceremony.
Weirdly, a lot of the ceremony just felt very understated to me, which feels weird. I felt largely bored by the Oscars this year.
Maybe it's just because of the buildup. We expected a lot of, you know, things to go awry, fires to have to be put out. And it was a largely pretty controlled space outside of a couple of very long speeches. I'm going to say elsewhere about Conan O'Brien's hosting. Do you know what I love about him? He is a very setup and punchline joke writer. Like, he would be a great Weekend Update writer, for example. And I liked the formality of that. That said, he would begin the jokes every time by being like, oh, and I loved Anora, and I loved The Brutalist, and I wish there was something a little bit spicier in the setup for the jokes that didn't feel so we're just getting to the punchline.
Yeah, I think it's always hard when you do one of these. It's sort of like, we talked about this with Nikki Glaser, right? At the Globes, it's just sort of, you start this and you sort of have to run through everything that's nominated. You have to address things like a bullet point.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I really enjoyed when Jimmy did it.
Yeah, no. Generally speaking, I liked Conan's jokes a lot. I even sympathized with, he just left in a joke about Baby Girl that was almost certainly written months ago,
yeah.
You know, when that was still in the conversation because he liked it so much. And working with Jimmy on the two Oscars preceding this, I know that feeling of, oh, that joke is so hilarious, but that whatever movie we're talking about didn't make, we had pages and pages of Saltburn jokes. And that movie obviously did not make it into the Oscars conversation, but you just wanted something about, you know, humping the ground or whatever happened in that movie.
I don't remember that movie.
Oh, yeah, not at all?
Who was in it?
Jacob Elordi, girl, where are you? It's time to come back.
I'm excited for the sequel, Pepper Freeze.
Oh, my, that's your wordplay?
what's the antonym to burn?
No, coward, you are not.
Chill? Pepper chill?
Pepper chill. I watch that every ABC Saturday morning for years.
But no, I mean, I obviously sympathize with the whole procedure of trying to, you know, make this Oscars. I feel like not just the controversy with everything going on, but it's also still after the fires. You know, there's still this sort of need to be respectful. I feel like people don't want to be a little bit too spicy.
Yeah.
And the Oscars certainly aren't the Globes.
Right. No, there's little opportunity to be that irreverent. One other thing I wanted to criticize lightly is that, so Conan had a big part of the monologue where he was very sincere talking about the how reliable the Oscars are, and that like for years and years we'll have this ceremony, you know, even though it seems superfluous, whatever. And of course we know my feelings about calling the Oscars superfluous, and meanwhile the Super Bowl is like we consider it like an essential human event. Moving on.
At least Trump didn't come to this.
No fucking joke. I mean, you say that facetiously, but I am glad he doesn't have the instinct to come. But so Conan did this big sincere section, and then afterwards he did this musical number called I Won't Waste Your Time. And mm-hmm. my problem with it was I thought the number was really funny, except the number should have been really long and the part mm-hmm. preceding it should have been briefer. He should have wasted our time even longer. And I think that would have been the more agonizing it got, the more the funnier it would have gotten, especially when you consider in retrospect how many people wasted our time later in the ceremony.
Yeah, well, we could talk about the Emilio Perez of it all now and just get it out Please. Of the way. First of all, the jokes about Carla Sofia Gascon went a little easy.
Yes, though I don't really know how you do that.
Yeah.
Like, how hard can you go into the things she specifically referenced? Like, I mean, I'm just saying there's, if the words George Floyd came out of Conan's mouth, I mean, what would we do? I mean, I don't know what I would do with myself.
Yeah, I think there was sort of a reticence to touch on some things. I mean, I feel like you could have made, you know, a joke about No Other Land being her favorite movie or something, yeah. you know. But there was just this, it was so interesting seeing a joke made about her, and then the camera wasn't focusing on her at all, right? So it's like, is she here? And then you get a close-up of her, and she's doing like a, oh, like, thank you, like, I'm just here to have a good time. And then when he did make another joke about her, I love how she, like, leaned into someone and whispered, like, I don't even think she knew what he was saying.
No, that was when he was like, oh, and Carla, if you want to tweet about me, my name is Jimmy Kimmel. And she appeared to be leaning over to someone to ask what he said,
yes.
or maybe who Jimmy was. I don't know what was happening there, but it didn't look like it registered for her.
But that wasn't that the Oscar she was tweeting about?
Oh, that's probably true. Yeah. Oh, no. I think it was maybe 3 ago. I could be wrong. It could be. My favorite part of that joke, though, and this is why I'm so glad Conan got to host the Oscars, he made the joke about her publicist saying the F word 475 times or something in reference, I guess Honora uses the F word that many times. And then Conan does an impression of the publicist where he screams, what did you tweet? And
yes.
the cartoonishness of it, that is something that many other Oscar hosts wouldn't give you. Like, that's not Kimmel, that's not Jon Stewart, that's not Chris Rock. So that silliness I loved seeing.
I just love seeing his face. Like, he makes me comfortable. You know,
yes.
I miss right. watching Conan O'Brien every night. That was a late night show that I always tuned into.
When we are at Kimmel, we can't even pick a favorite bit he did in that show. Like, I personally love when he would do the fake TV channels that he found on the NBC satellite. And and there was one called the Clive Clemens Inappropriate Response Channel, where you would just watch scenarios where someone says something inappropriate. Like, a dad and his son are talking, and the son's like, Dad, check this out. And it's a magazine of, I don't know, fishing. And then the dad goes, check this out. And it's like, near naked guys playing volleyball, and it's just and then you see a guy go inappropriate, like, what sketch, who thought of this? It's so stupid.
By the way, the amount of f-words in Honora, be hard pressed to know if they were talking about fuck or faggot.
Yeah. There is a scene where the word faggot is said 11 times.
She says it so many times in that end scene, and you know what, that is real acting, okay? Because I know she's an ally.
Yeah, right.
You can't be a ghost face and not be an ally.
I was rewatching the scenes from that. She really does act the shit out of those scenes when she's unmasked as the killer in Scream.
When Courtney Cox, like, has the gun on her and she's, like, pleading for her life, and then she's, like, says something, you know, like Dewey, like, cry like a bitch or something, like, and then she slams her into the stove. Like, that is some of the best acting that's been in the Scream franchise.
No, I completely agree. I mean, those movies aren't as revered as the first two, but the acting in that scene does hold up to that. Also, we should talk about Sean Baker winning 4 Oscars in a single night, which and for a single film, which has never been done. Walt Disney won 4 Oscars once upon a time for whatever weird-ass fucking shorts he was doing in the 50s. And then Bong Joon-ho won 3 Oscars, and then the 4th goes to international film, which means it goes to the country and not him, which is a little bit of a technicality. But
speaking of international film, baby, I saw a clip of you on Instagram from Brazil's Instagram or whatever, and it was the funniest thing I've seen.
Okay, here's what happened. So I was on the red carpet of the Oscars with Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel. He does that bit every year where he bothers people on the red carpet and does tequila shots with them. So I was the writer supervising that. I happened to be on the carpet next to press from Brazil. And I just turned to them and I go, "Oh wait, are you from Brazil?" And then they turn and they say, "Yes." And I said, "Oh, well, I love Fernanda Torres. I need her to win this year. She was amazing, and I'm still here, and I love her mom, who's in the movie Fernanda Montenegro, who was nominated in the 90s for Central Station." Suddenly, they have turned a camera on me. I literally am just speaking to this woman. And then, by the way, I haven't said my name. 20 minutes later, my entire Instagram is filled with Brazilian flags. I'm telling you, I'm smothered in Brazil right now.
Now you have to come to Brazil.
I know, right. And by the way, I get the thrill of being told to come to Brazil. I wanted to be like, I can't believe I wasn't at that Madonna Copacabana concert she did with 55 million fans or whatever were there or something. Anyway, Brazilian people do fandom right.
Yeah.
Not only are they obsessed with Fernanda Torres, who unfortunately did not win Best Actress the other day, but they literally had plaster cast figures of her, parades in the street, artwork of her and her mother. It's we don't have anything like that here, and we're allegedly obsessed with actors. Why are we not this avid? Why are we so inhibited?
Yeah, well, I see big things in her future, She's definitely going to voice a villain in Despicable Me 6. And I'll be there opening day, because I'm a Gru head.
This is news to me.
I love the Despicable Me films. The Minions films? A little annoying.
They are. I've only seen the one Minions film, I believe called Minions, where Sandra Bullock is a villain in it.
Yes.
And John Hamm? Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite thing is how they do explain away that the Minions were out of commission during World War II.
I do not need to know this timeline this deep.
They follow villains around. It's did Hitler have Minions? He did not.
They should not have taken a hiatus during that point. Yeah.
The other thing about Emilia Perez was they might have made Carla Sofia Gascon walk to the Oscar ceremony herself, but they sure piled in a lot of people either involved in the movie or from Netflix, because every time Emilia Perez was mentioned as nominated in anything, I heard the loudest applause in the theater. It was just okay, are 900 people here representing Netflix?
Well, I mean, of course, Zoe Saldana ended up winning. You know what I'm surprised is not memed to death? Zoe Saldana looking to camera and going, "Mommy," like this. So me. But also, El Mal won Best Original Song, which means the director of the movie, Jacques Audiard, won an Oscar for that among his many nominations. That was the only one he won for. But
good.
The two main writers of that song went up there. One of them is a startlingly handsome man. And yes. Then this other woman is talking about the song and then just starts singing it. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, she wanted everyone to sing along with her. Girl, we don't know the words to that song. What? And then, by the way, nobody reported on this. She does that. The guy she's with leaves the stage. He's hundreds of feet ahead of her. I've never seen two people disperse on a stage before.
Also, was it Jacques who was "Wrap it up"?
Just right there.
Because someone's just "Wrap it up." I don't know what that French man looks like, to be honest.
Right.
I've tried to avoid. I try to avoid most contact with the French, to be honest. They have great PR, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, actually, it's the Italians who have great PR, because we know that the French are rude, but Italians, a little bit ruder. But I'm actually going to go back and say that the French... extremely annoying. I'm sorry. they on that stage, I have never wanted the hook from the Apollo to come out quicker and pull these people off stage. Not only was she singing from Emilio Perez, and then she besmirches Sondheim.
Wait, what do you mean?
At the end when she's like, Amelia, Amelia, Amelia. I was like, she was doing Maria.
Wow. Of all the nerve.
That was low down. It was disgusting. And she will be hearing from Stephen Sondheim's lawyer as soon as I contact them and tell them that they need to sue.
Okay, right. I'm sure they'll listen to you. Okay, but these are some uncontrolled moments in an otherwise pretty controlled ceremony, I think. Mm-hmm. Do you know what really surprised me? Kieran Culkin, when he won for A Real Pain, and that was the obvious choice of the night. Like, there was no use betting on anybody else in that category winning. A lot of times when people give, like, 11 or 12 speeches in a row over award season, the last one at the Oscars is the most pretentious or the least fun or the most, like, let me just thank everybody who needs to be thanked. Kieran Culkin's speech at the Oscars, definitely his best one all season. And I can't think of another speech where his performance on stage was as important as the one, as the person in the audience he was talking to. He was talking to his wife, and he made this joke about how she said if he won an Oscar, she would then give him a fourth kid. She was so shocked, clearly, and enjoying it. And that was a unusually classic moment for the Oscars. I thought that was like a really, really memorable moment.
You only get moments like that when Whitney's on stage, because she'll be talking to anybody. Whitney Houston.
Oh, with that time Natalie Cole won that American Music Award, and she pointed at Whitney in the crowd. That's one of the best moments ever.
Yeah. Kieran's was fun, you know? I think he is the epitome of mixing pop rocks and soda.
Yeah. he's a little shaky.
He's just up there. And also, Macaulay is kind of the same. I don't know if you saw him on the red carpet, but he, like, the poses and, like, just, like, his goofiness on the red carpet. I love the Culkins.
Oh, yeah. Then their aunt is Bonnie Bedelia from the Die Hard movies.
And also, their other brother, another ghost face.
I know. It's confusing.
Yeah.
It all rubs together.
Unfortunately, he wasn't one of the better ones, but his death was very funny when Emma Roberts was like, no, bitch, you're not part of this.
Yes. She actually, it was very novel to cast her as a ghost face. When the turn comes, you're like, oh, yeah, of course you're a killer. I'm an idiot. You know who I want to give a shout out to? Devine Joy Randolph, who presented to Best Supporting Actress. She really was tasked with something difficult, where she basically did what we used to call Fab Five, where the five former winners present to the five nominees and say something, sincere about their performances or whatever. She did it all single-handedly. So she addressed all five of the nominees while looking at the teleprompter and also looking at them, and then presenting the award to Zoe Saldana. Now, Robert Downey Jr. did a similar thing for supporting actor, but I found that to be a little chummy and uncomfortable somehow. I thought she really handled it with some grace.
Yeah, well, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. not handling something with grace isn't very shocking, even though I love him.
Yeah, right. And he is still committed to these bootcut slacks. He has said, I'm going to swim in the pants on stage.
And the sunglasses.
Right. No, he really is like a celebrity from like 1961, like hanging out with latter-day Cary Grant.
Now, I have a question.
Okay.
You think Devine watched all their movies?
Absolutely not. Well, you know what? She is a huge movie fan, and I've seen her on TCM talk about how much she loves Desk Set and stuff. So that means she cares about movies.
She does.
I wouldn't be surprised if she saw all of them, but at the same time, I don't know that I thought those opinions were necessarily all hers.
I think she saw The Brutalist because, like, she had to see The Brutalist, you know? But I don't think she watched A Complete Unknown.
It's a good question. I keep going back and forth about what I think about Monica Barbaro in that movie. I'm like, she was Joan Baez, but she wasn't really. Anyway, just to know that that's still on my mind. But let's talk about A Complete Unknown.
Well, let's get into your thoughts on A Complete Unknown when we come back with more Oscars on Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Fatty 15. Have you noticed any signs of aging? Well, I have a painting upstairs that keeps me young. But Lewis, what do you do?
Oh my God, Herd Hatfield in the picture of Dorian Gray. Classic performance. What do I do? I do Fatty 15, which I'm going to tell you about right now. We're so excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It is an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness. And you guessed it, aging and longevity. What are we, 7 years into this podcast? Longevity is beginning to become a concern. You know what I'm saying? Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a key longevity-enhancing nutrient, which helps to slow biological aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. Oh my God, that portrait is shaking.
Thankfully, Fatty 15 repairs age-related damage to cells, protects them from future breakdown, and activates pathways in the body that help regulate our sleep, mood, and natural repair mechanisms that support our overall health. In fact, 72% of Fatty 15 customers report seeing or feeling benefits within 16 weeks, including improved metabolic, liver, and heart health, smoother functioning joints, deeper sleep, or healthier hair, skin, and nails. Now that's essential.
Fatty 15 is a science-backed, award-winning, vegan, patented, 100% pure C15 supplement. It's free of flavors, fillers, allergens, or preservatives. As you know, I am a supplement-friendly girl. In the morning, I like to pop a couple of things. One might be a gummy. One might be a Fatty 15. I throw them all down. Often, it's tasty.
Fatty 15 is on a mission to optimize your C15 levels to help you live healthier and longer. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/keepit and using code KEEPIT at checkout. All right, we are back with more Oscars chat, and we were last talking about a complete unknown. I just want to say that, obviously, Timmy wasn't really going to win. You know, he got the SAG, which was great, but I just think that his swag has just been dialed up so much during this award season that he won in a different way.
Well, he, like Coleman Domingo, I think, this year, and now Cynthia Erivo, this year was their "you will get it someday" Oscars. You know what I mean? Like, guaranteed it will happen eventually. But, and I apologize if I've said this before, even though I like him as Bob Dylan, you know he's capable of way more than this. Like, his win should be more special than the performance he gave in this movie. I mean, honestly, the role doesn't demand that much complexity from him. Like, he's meant to have mystique more than anything. The movie is called The Complete Unknown. So I was happy Adrian won, because I think Adrian is the best performance in the category. I thought The Brutalist was underrated. I would have voted for that for Best Picture, personally. But now, let us please get to the speech of Adrian Brody, because girl...
If you thought The Brutalist was long...
Yeah, bitch. Talk about needing an intermission, motherfucker. I was so shocked, but also let me just say, and I cannot do cringe anything. I hate cringe comedy. I don't want to watch a viral awkward video of somebody.
Just say you hate The Office, Lewis.
I'll go into that some other day. But watching this man go on and tell the orchestra to stop playing because, quote unquote, he's done this before, and then go on and then somehow have less to say after he tells them to shut up. Almost offensive. And also, but what I want to say about him is, actors never change. Please stay this way. I want you to be insufferable. I want you to be Sean Penn standing in front of me telling me what the real war is or whatever. I want it. It was out of touch in such an old-fashioned way that I expect from maybe a Dustin Hoffman Best Actor speech or something. You know, condescending, strange, going for poetry, coming up with very little. And I sympathize with Adrian Brody in a way. Because do you know what kind of roles Adrian Brody ended up doing after he won the Oscar? And then, you know, Tina Fey said he was a terrible SNL host, sort of squandered his reputation. Mm-hmm. Well, 12 years ago, and I found this out via Twitter, thank you to Carter Nixon and at Curly McNulty for bringing this up. He was in a Rob Schneider movie called Inappropriate Comedy. It's one of those movies where it says unrated on the cover. It's him. It is Michelle Rodriguez, it is Lindsay Lohan, and Adrian Brody, and he plays a character named Flirty Harry, which is a gay parody of Dirty Harry, and he says, "Go ahead, make me gay," in the movie. This bitch was down low, near the bottom, desperate. Oh.
But, you know, that was right before he made Grand Budapest Hotel, you know, so he made a little comeback then.
And also, Wes was always in his corner, and you know Wes loves making little corners, so that was cute. But Adrian Brody, I'm just saying, like, once you get the opportunity to prove after 20 years you still have it and deserve an Oscar, I could see wanting to be a little self-important in that moment when you are literally a fucking co-star of Rob Schneider 12 years ago. Because, you know, Deuce Bigelow didn't win at Cannes. You know what I'm saying?
Also, remember that, like, four-hour History Channel miniseries he did, Houdini?
Oh, my God, yes. What did we learn about him other than he was Hungarian and, you know, a little spooky?
Yeah. Chains and whips excite him?
And then he had two hit songs over the past. We had the Dua Lipa and the Eminem Houdini.
Yeah. All right. I was very happy with Anora winning Best
Picture.
Okay,
yeah.
And let me say why. I like fun, you know? I think I was talking about this last week. Like, I like films that just feel like they're films that people enjoyed, people wanted to see, you know? People didn't feel like they had to see it out of obligation, which is how I felt about The Brutalist.
Mm-hmm. I concur. And also, it's like, it bends a lot of genres really successfully. Like, when it's a romance, even though it's this setup arrangement and she's a dancer and then she gets involved with this Vanya guy and then it's arranged and then it turns into this caper, it plays with all those genres really successfully. And it feels totally epic, not just because of the runtime, but because of what she goes through, that she has this, I can only compare her to Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny, that kind of like in your face, screaming, hilarious, emotional kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I didn't like the kind of White Knight quality of Yura Borisov at the end of the movie, I did like how you think this movie is only about her having a soul, and at the end this other guy emerges who also has a soul. And that was pleasurable. And also, if we're talking about the way that you choose Best Picture, which is you rank all your choices, I cannot imagine putting it below 4 on the list of the nominees. You know what I mean? Like, you would have to put it in the top.
And if you're talking about that win from Mikey Madison, too, that's what people vote for, you know? I mean, people vote for a performance that just sort of feels like it carries the film, you know? And I think that there's been a lot of talk, annoying talk, about how, you know, her beating Demi Moore was just like the plot of The Substance, which I'm like, sure, if you understand just the base line of The Substance being a younger woman replaced her.
Yeah, Margaret Qualley has dark hair too. I mean,
right.
What? Okay.
The actual plot of the movie is that she becomes Margaret Qualley. So actually, I feel like most interpretations of The Substance don't even seem to understand what the fucking Substance is about. Because the movie is about her internalized shame and her actually becoming this woman and continuing to want to be this woman and fucking up herself in the process, you know? Like, it's very telling that so many people skip that scene. Like, one of the best scenes in The Substance, actually, where she is listening to the voicemails of the man that she's supposed to be going on the date with, and he's so excited to see her, but she can't stand how she looks, you know? And I think that is the core of The Substance, and too many people boil it down to she's being replaced by this younger woman. And, you know, I'm like, now they want to come after my girl Mikey Madison because she beat Demi. And I'm like, you know what? Demi should have known she was going to lose to a hooker role, okay? Because Julia Roberts took the Globe over her when she was nominated for Ghost.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you for doing that math for everybody.
Yeah, okay? So Kevin Huvane should have known.
I want to say, I feel like for Demi Moore, the nomination should have been the win. I personally cannot imagine watching that movie back-to-back with Anora and thinking Demi Moore deserves the Oscar more than Mikey Madison does. Mikey Madison dominates the movie more than Demi Moore does. Demi basically gets half the movie, you know? And it's also not a lot of dialogue to play with. Also, I'm sorry, I'm annoyed with the fandom for The Substance. The amount of people being like, oh, I was really wrapped up in the narrative of Demi Moore. Really? Well, that's not the same thing as the performance. And also, by the way, there's all the actresses here have narratives. So maybe go and Wikipedia them and see what they've been up to. Because by the way, Fernanda Torres should have won that Oscar. And like, watch the hundreds of fucking roles she's been in, or however many dozens she's been in. She's a tremendous actress. It just feels like, in a way, people only humanized Demi Moore in this race and didn't think of any of the other actors as necessarily deserving because they haven't been through as much as Demi Moore has. And it's like, you don't sound like you're even educated about these people.
It also goes back to a thing that's very annoying about the very basic, this is just like the plot of The Substance things, right? Because, I mean, when she won the Golden Globe and everyone was very excited and we were obviously moved by her speech, and if you've read her memoir, which is fucking amazing, we love that memoir.
Her life was downright bracing. I do not mean to downplay the hardships that Demi Moore has faced,
But this is another classic example of an actor that we love. We really want them to get it because we love them, because we have like a familiarity with them. Like, you know, it's giving Sandra Bullock winning for The Blind Side, you know? And it's not the same as, you know, Julia Roberts winning for Erin Brockovich. Like, that was a fucking role.
Oh, I mean, the way she tackles dialogue in that movie is unbelievable. And also, people really vote for an unforgettable character.
Yes.
You know, which Anora definitely is.
And unfortunately, I don't think the character of Elizabeth Sparkle is unforgettable, because I honestly think that the movie's plot itself is very basic.
And also, I just feel like the star of the movie is the direction.
Yeah.
More so than any one acting moment. You know, I make a broken record comparing it to a music video, but it's the sensation of a music video, just like a well-drawn concept.
Also, there's this idea that the Academy doesn't really appreciate genre films, and that's why she didn't win. And I'm like, I don't think that's it at all.
Well, also, it's like, maybe they don't appreciate horror as much as they should, but is it possible that people she was up against were just amazing? It reminds me of the Barbie conversation last year, where it's like, you guys are complaining this movie isn't getting more, but I'm not hearing any intelligence quotient about the other films. Like, it sounds like you didn't pay attention to those and you just paid attention to this one.
Yeah. Also, A Different Man did it much better.
Yes, which did not win makeup, correct?
No, it didn't. So
that is a bit upsetting.
There's a lot of hate in the world.
Good to know. That's also like a Bruce Springsteen lyric? Okay. I think it's from Nebraska.
What else is going on at the Oscars to wrap this up? Oh, weird timing with the announcement that Jeff Bezos is going to get his greasy hands all over the James Brown franchise, and then doing this
right
tribute to the Broccolis, because, man, it felt like a eulogy.
Well, it was just downright confusing. Also, so Barbara Broccoli, the famed James Bond producer, won the Governor's Award, or the Irving Thalberg Award this year. And so I guess that's why they set up this little thing where Lisa from Blackpink performed Live and Let Die, a version I didn't care for, even though she sounded pretty good.
Fergie's was better.
Oh, I forgot all about that. Thank you. But also, by the way, Paul McCartney is still with us. And I feel like I see him in the news all the time. Was he not available? Anyway. And then Doja Cat did a Shirley Bassey impression, which was a pretty good impression for 3 seconds. Yeah. And then we could have moved on from that.
I appreciated her Instagram, though, where she was like, listen, I pushed myself. I had fun. A bitch hit some flats.
I loved the Instagram post. Also, the girl is funny. I mean to say the girl is funny. And then Ray performed Skyfall. Now, we definitely still have Adele in our midst. I mean, that was a tough ask and sell, even though she is a brilliant singer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's just promo for that song Born Again that they have. Lisa, Doja Cat, and Ray. But I love when they were first announced as performing at the Oscars, it was reported that they were going to be singing that song, which was weird. And then it was, oh no, they're going to sing some other tunes. And it's, okay, were we going to get Benson Boone out here singing a song from I don't know, Singing in the Rain?
Yeah.
Let's just, the thing about the Oscars for me too is that whenever they decide that they're going to tribute something because it's an anniversary, it always feels so weird. Like, I thought we were going somewhere else when Conan O'Brien was like, the anniversary of Kill Bill, and then it was just, here's Daryl Hannah. And I was like, oh, okay.
Also, right. And also, why Daryl Hannah for, I mean, I understand she is Elle Driver, but she's like the sixth lead in that.
Uma was busy.
Right, right. It makes you feel like Uma was busy. Yes.
Also, the Quincy Jones tribute was lovely.
Okay, except interesting. I mean, like, not that I don't want two songs from The Wiz at the Oscars. We obviously got Cynthia Erivo at the beginning, which, by the way, fabulous. The yes. Ariana Grande Over the Rainbow. Cynthia doing Home, and then the two of them doing Defying Gravity together. Lovely. And then Queen Latifah performed Ease On Down the Road. She would have maybe been my sixth choice for that. I don't know.
You don't think she brought down the house?
No. It may have been her last holiday, if I'm being honest.
Someone set her up.
You know what? It wasn't that joyful of noise to me, I have to say. Remember that movie, Dolly Parton?
Of course I remember that movie. And Dolly Parton, RIP to her husband, who we never knew.
Who I was shocked existed. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know my theory about this, which is very few people have stories about Dolly Parton's now late husband. And one of them is Jane Fonda, who told a story about how Dolly made him laugh so hard he fell over in his chair or something. And I listened to that story and I thought, Jane Fonda would lie for Dolly Parton. I think she knows this is all fucking made up. She would help her.
You think there was just time where they were like, well, we got to say he's dead.
Right. Yeah. It's like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Yeah, the kid has to die eventually. But yes, R.E.P. to that man. Quickly to get back to Sean Baker. Crazy to see somebody with four Oscars in their hands looking like, you know, Adele at the Grammys or Lauryn Hill at the Grammys or whatever. And I could not believe how well prepared he was for every single speech. He was really impressive throughout the night. I did not expect that level of just clarity. Loved him standing up for movie theaters, which everybody in that room jumped up in approval for. Because if you saw The Brutalist at home, you probably did not understand why The Brutalist was at the Oscars.
Yeah. Is it streaming yet?
I don't know. I mean, like, imagine watching that on a plane.
I'll finally check it out. I'm kidding. I've seen it. Sean Baker, I absolutely love. And I just feel like I loved him shouting out Film Independent. I just love this spirit of an independent film winning, because we're in such a film era right now where the industry kind of sucks. You know, it sucks for writers. It sucks for actors. It's shit's not being made. Corporations are running shit. Everything feels like it's being, you know, focus grouped or algorithmed at this point to death.
Right.
And a true independent-ass filmmaker who is making movies that he wants to make, getting funding to make movies that he wants to make, and not trying to, like, he has said in interviews, he's not trying to get this Oscar so that he can go off and make a bunch of money making a Marvel movie, you know?
Right.
Like, he's going to make another Sean Baker film. And that's what I love.
It's like, I'm happy for Chloe Zhao that she got the opportunity to make whatever that superhero thing was. But at the same time, can we let the Chloe Zhaos be Chloe Zhaos? Like, can this not be like a livable life?
Well, she's going to do Buffy, so let's let her do that first.
Okay, all right. I do trust her. I do trust her.
Anyway, I love Sean Baker. And I loved him shouting out the sex worker community and Mikey Madison doing the same. And, you know, there are annoying comments about it online. People being like, he just used the community for this movie or whatever. And I'm like, watch a single fucking Sean Baker film, okay? He cares about people on the fringes of society in every movie.
Yeah. No, he gives you unforgettable characters every time. It's just so crazy that Red Rocket got nothing. Like Simon Rex absolutely should have been in the Oscars conversation that year. And the fact that Sean got his comeuppance this year with so much praise for this movie is at least a bit just.
Mm-hmm. By the way, someone did comment on our YouTube that the actress from Tangerine, the actors were not allowed to be a part of the Hollywood Reporter roundtable, I guess, which is why the Hollywood Reporter at the time wasn't excluding them.
I see. Okay, good to know.
But I want the real tea. Who didn't allow them?
And I know there is some. I want the real tangerine. Yeah.
It's Clementine for us to learn the truth.
Okay. Let's move it along.
Anyway, I did have to rewatch the ending of the Oscars because, man, I fell asleep for the last hour.
Oh, I was amped from being at the Oscars for a second, but I love the long drawn-out ceremony of it. I love that it's paced like something for like Henry VIII or something, you know, just like sit in your throne all day and take this all in.
I was tired. I actually watched the Oscars in D.C. in a hotel room because I went to D.C. for a rescheduled book tour event with Dan Zak was the my moderator. And he says hello. And a bunch of our listeners say hello, too. It was also giving, I just want to say, when Lewis and I went to Boston, we got a lot of, I can't believe you came to Boston from people. And I got a lot of that in D.C., too. Like, oh my God, thank you for coming to D.C. I'm like, girl, it's like 3 hours away on the train.
And also, D.C. is such a pleasure. I go there all the time. I want to go there for World Pride. We'll see if I make it.
It's not like I was going to, you know, meet somebody at the Trump Ivanka.
The Trump Ivanka. Pull up in the Trump Ivanka.
The city's perfectly lovely, but D.C. gays scare me.
Okay.
They drink a lot.
They're a khaki-oriented people.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the Oscars.
Ooh, I think we covered most of it, yeah. And by the way, I'll just keep talking about these ceremonies for the rest of my life, so this isn't the last of it.
Are you okay? Award season's over.
I am a cactus flower who hits full bloom on this Sunday, and now I fold and wither, and I don't see another movie for like 5 months.
Yeah, you're going to crawl back into like your crypt or something?
Just game shows for the next 3 months or so, including The Floor, which you're on, which I need to catch up on.
Yes. Airs Wednesday nights on Fox and the next day on Hulu.
Okay.
And I'm still in the competition.
You're still flooring them.
Yeah. Still making.
Shuffling along.
Still throwing out sassy one-liners, of course.
Oh, yeah, right. Once an episode. That's nice that they give the queer community a chance to play around a little.
All right. When we're back, we're joined by the fantastic Brenda Song. But before that, some housekeeping. Exciting news from Crooked's book imprint, Crooked Media Reads. Woodworking, the brand new novel by Yellow Jackets writer and cultural commentator Emily St. James, is out now wherever you like to get books. Woodworking is an unforgettable and heartwarming debut following a trans high school teacher from a small town in South Dakota who befriends the only other trans woman she knows, one of her students. The 5-star Goodreads reviews are already pouring in, and Woodworking is featured on Them and AV Club's most anticipated books of 2025 lists. Publishers Weekly says St. James enthralls with her depiction of what it's like to be trans in a conservative and insular community and the courage it takes for people to be openly themselves. It's a quick, delightful read that is more relevant than ever. You're going to love it. So get your copy of Woodworking right now at crooked.com/books. And when we're back, Brenda Song. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that helps you take control of your money with simple tools that make it easy to start saving and investing for your future. And you don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals.
You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You know what you also don't need? A ton of time. You can create your Acorns account and start investing in just 5 minutes. Once you're in, Acorns gives you small, simple steps to get you and your money on track. I just want to say that when I think of Acorns, I immediately think of Gopher from Winnie the Pooh. And I found him too loud for that group of people. I needed him to be quiet. Tigger was the performer. Gopher needed to lay off.
Are you ready to take control of your money? Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/keepit or download the Acorns app to get started.
Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/keepit.
This week's guest has been acting for, if you can believe it, 30 years, but please believe she is just getting started. While we first fell in love with her as London Tipton in The Suite Life of Zack and Cody, her latest projects like The Last Showgirl and Netflix's upcoming series Running Point has shown that her best work is yet to come. Please welcome to Keep It, it's Brenda Song.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. That's quite
the intro.
Thank you for
being here. I mean, you've earned it, okay? I was
You're like, so sweet.
I was telling Lewis before we started, I was like, I am OG Suite Life of Zach and Cody fan. Oh, I was Disney down.
I want to say thank you, and also I'm sorry.
All right.
I always feel the need to apologize to everyone's parents because I'm like, being a parent myself, I understand the constant loop that these shows stay on. So my deepest apologies to you and your parents.
I've actually said this with Lewis on the show. I feel like I've revisited, you know, that or Wizards of Waverly Place or even like Nickelodeon shows, like all that, right? And I didn't realize how much in kids' shows, it's just a lot of yelling all the time. I think my mom commented on that once when I was younger. And now I'm like, oh, we were just laughing at kids, you know, yelling at each other. What was it like, I guess, your acting when you were on a show like that versus then stepping into, you know, adult projects?
Well, you know, there's something really fun about the innocence of being a child actor. You just don't know any different. And being on a show like The Suite Life was so fun because I always say I got to literally step into my dream character's shoes every single day and do like the most wild, crazy things. And so I think as a kid, you're just like a kid on a playground. You're just having fun. And especially with kids' shows, everything's so broad and crazy. And I think transitioning into an adult while also trying to transition into an adult actor is hard because you're still trying to figure out who you are as a human being, as, you know, a young adult navigating your way and then doing that also in your work when you haven't quite lived in, or had enough life experience to actually feel these emotions and not just emulate them and pretend this is what falling in love is when you haven't actually done that before. So I think, you know, the same way that it's sort of me transitioning from, you know, a kid to an adult, I feel like doing that, I kind of did that on camera as well, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, no, it's been really fun. Like, especially I think in my 20s, I always say like art imitates life, life imitates art. One of my first like jobs coming out of Suite Life was like The Social Network where I was a college student. And then I was on Scandal where I played an assistant. I was like, that's what I would sort of be doing in my normal life. But yeah, so I think it was just fun. Kind of like the more life experience I had, I feel like I obviously became a better actor because I started to understand what it actually was to feel and go through these things. So I think the difference is like, I always say like acting on Disney was like very up here. And as I've grown older, I realized that everything comes from the gut, like just being more grounded. So yeah.
I just want to say that Jane Fonda has said something similar about going from like rom-coms in the 60s to grittier projects in the 70s. So I think you're right on track. If you want like, if you want a 90-year-long career, get ready.
I mean, please.
I just want to say, you are so good in The Social Network. I hope you look back on that performance and think, oh, that was like a kind of a milestone moment. You and Rooney Mara, I think, are like two of the most memorable parts of that movie.
Oh, thank you. I that project changed my life on screen, off screen. Like it was the most incredible project for me to like kind of come to at that point in my life and career. So I always have such a special place in my heart for that movie.
I mean, I remember seeing that movie come out and then just being like, that is Brenda Song. I've seen Brenda Song for a minute. And now jumping to Running Point, you are working with such a amazing cast of people, you know, Kate Hudson, you know, and you've got Chet Hayes as well, which is so.
Can I tell you something? I love Chet so much. He is like, I didn't know what to expect. And he, I have to say, is one of just like the sweetest and I think misunderstood humans out there. He has a really funny sense of humor and can really, he like pokes fun at himself. I absolutely have a very special place in my heart for Chet.
When we saw that interview he did with Z-Way, I thought, oh, wait a minute. This is a really funny person. Like, it's not all I'm actually crazy. It's like he like outwitted her a couple of times, which never happens on that show.
Mm-hmm. And he sort of steers into, I think, you know, what people expect of him. He's so funny on this show. Like, I think more than anything, I was so incredibly impressed by how prepared he was, how funny he was on this show, and how seriously he took this role. I was like, it was really funny, like, you know, from him freestyling to, you know, finding bits when there wasn't anything there. Like, it was really quite impressive. And to be honest, working on this project was kind of crazy because there would be times when I would be in a scene, I'm like, And I can't believe I'm in a scene with Kate Hudson right now. Like, I'm watching Justin Theroux just go off on a chance. I'm like, this is crazy. And I feel incredibly grateful to just be surrounded by such, not just incredibly talented people, but like kind and generous, like human beings. It's been quite an experience and I feel just very, very lucky.
Well, I want to say on that front though, I mean, you talk about them being great actors. You actually, I think, actually have a longer career than some of these people, like than even Kate Hudson or Justin Theroux is kind of up there too. But do you feel like a bunch of kind of like acting veterans up there? Like you're all relatively, you're young people. And yet some of you have been in this business like 30 years, 25 years.
We must be psychotic that we've been doing it so long and still love it so much. But that's what's something that was beautiful about working on something like this, where I think we all come to the table with so much different kinds of experiences and stories, but all still had the same goal and the same sort of work ethic, which is really, really hard to do. But I think that says a lot to Mindy Kaling and Dave Stassen and Ike Barinholtz, our creators who put this team together, are very like-minded actors and crew and cast. It was really lovely, but also really sort of fun to be on a set where, you know, you have Justin Theroux and Kate Hudson who rarely do TV. And then you have, you know, Scotty MacArthur and Drew Tarver, who, like, you know, Scotty is such a profound writer. Drew is an improv like actor. Like, it was such a fun set to be on. It felt like a masterclass in comedy because you had such a different array of actors coming to the table. I felt like every day I was just trying to soak everything in because it was so much fun because they obviously have so much experience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and speaking of people who've been in the industry for so long, my friend Hunter Harris interviewed you for Cosmo.
Yes.
With Macaulay. And
yes.
What is it like, I guess, you know, doing a joint interview together? Like, what was even the conversation with you both before you were like, I guess we're doing a cover together for Cosmopolitan?
You know, honestly, it was really scary because, you know, being in the public eye, you try to keep as many personal things you can personal. But at a certain point, like, it was funny, I was actually more hesitant to do the cover than Mac was. He was like, yes, let's do it. And I was kind of like, you know, there's so few things that we keep private, but at the same time, it's like, you know, he's my person. We have a family. It's like nothing that we want to hide or anything like that. And if we're going to tell our love story, you know, what better way than for us to tell it? And Hunter did such a beautiful job. We had such a great lunch together. And we sort of just had the convo that if we were going to do this, we wanted to be as open as possible and do this. You know, we didn't want to go into not wanting to answer anything and keeping it. So it's like, if we're going to do this, let's embrace where we are. We're in such a wonderful, happy, joyous place. Like, we just want to spread the love and spread the joy and, you know, tell the world that in this crazy time, like, you know, you can find your person and, you know, life is all about ups and downs and you have to celebrate every yes. And, you know, because there's so many no's. And so for us, I think it was us celebrating this yes. We always joke that, you know, we don't post about our kids or anything like that. And they're like, oh, why aren't you on social media more? I'm like, because my phone is just filled with my kids, because that's my happy place. And so to be able to share a little bit of that has been really scary, to be honest, but also really liberating and fun, because this is like this new phase and chapter in my life. And I feel like I've never been so fulfilled in my personal life. And I think that's the reason why I feel so fulfilled in my professional life. And just wanting to sort of share that with the world is sort of what kind of pushed us to say yes.
Well, the Cosmo spread is almost chronically adorable. I mean, the pictures in it are, it's like, you have to like clutch the table looking at these pictures.
Oh, you're so kind.
But also, something about your relationship that has fascinated me recently is that Mac was just a contestant on Celebrity Jeopardy, where
yes.
I believe he cited you as like helping him prepare for this. And I want to know what kind of, it seems like he must be a fan of Jeopardy if he went on that show.
Oh, huge fan of Jeopardy. He grew up watching. His mom watches it religiously. And me being the tiger helicopter mom I am, when he was, I was like, oh, we're getting all of the trivia games. I was literally quizzing him with just like random like trivia, like crazy. I couldn't help myself. And I'm very, very proud of him. And funnily enough, Ike Barinholtz, one of our creators on the show and writers, he actually won the first season of Celebrity Jeopardy. So it's, we are a Jeopardy, Celebrity Jeopardy household apparently. But yeah, it was so much fun. I was so nervous for him. It was like, yeah.
The most nervous I've ever been for another person is watching them on Jeopardy. It's unlike anything. Like, watching somebody act is not as nerve-wracking.
No, not at all. And the funny thing is there was like a couple questions where I was literally like mouthing the answer. I was like, am I that person? I have become that person. I was like, honey, it's Peaky Blinders. Because he's never watched the show. And so little things. But I was totally helicopter mom, like so nervous and excited. But I'm really proud of him. He did a really good job. But he got Dratched.
Yes, Rachel Dratch. Also, yes. But also smart incredible. Lady. I'm not surprised she's great.
Iconic. Yes.
Another thing that I love too, you know, is just like you're talking about your love in that relationship. And I feel like one thing that he and like his brother really share is like they love their wives. Like I love hearing, you know, talk about his wife, you know, like when he's going through this whole awards circuit, you know. We're talking right before the Oscars. So how has it been following Kieran's journey through award season as a family?
You know, as with any familiar relationship, it's like, how can you not support one another, especially when you see someone doing what they love and getting the accolades and the flowers for doing what they love to do? I think it's very symbiotic. And I feel like, you know, people always ask, like, what's it like? And I was like, honestly, it's family. It's just what we know. And, you know, we're a crazy, you know, crazy bunch that all love this industry. So, yeah, I think it's just about enjoying, like, again, celebrating all the yeses and all the accolades, because, you know, life as an actor is pretty crazy. There's so many ups and downs. So I don't think it necessarily, let me answer your question. I don't know if it like shapes it, but I think it's definitely like, it's just, it is what it is. Like it's, you know, that's how they are off camera. So it doesn't feel like anything different or out of the, you know, out of the ordinary.
I mean, and you have the benefit too of being just, you know, having been in the industry since you were a kid too, you know? So I feel like you all share that.
Oh, 1,000%. It's kind of this unspoken sort of just understanding being a child actor, because you know, you don't realize that you've been living the work life of a 30-year-old person since you were very, very young. And so I think I feel like there's just something you can see another child actor from like across the room and just know. And just there's like you get it. You get it. We've been through it all. But yeah, no, of course, it's always so nice when you have that sort of, because it's such a unique experience being a child actor, and then a child actor who continuously acts into their adulthood is very unique. And so to have, you know, a group of people that sort of have that understanding, it's really nice.
Well, speaking of child actors, in The Last Showgirl, it's a bunch of people, Kieran and Shipka, even Jamie Lee Curtis to a certain extent is like a former child actor. And then, but all of you, including Pam Anderson, are doing things I've never seen you do on the silver screen before. And I was wondering what kind of bonding experience that was being with people who seem to all be doing something brand new for them.
That project was so incredibly special because I think it was such a small cast and crew, and everyone who worked on that project truly from the bottom of their heart wanted to be there. And the beautiful thing is Gia Coppola, our director, she really took a risk, I feel like, in casting all of us in, you know, that's really on her, putting us in roles that people didn't expect us to be in. And she really kind of like created such a beautiful, safe place for us to take risks that we wouldn't normally take. And she really prepped us as actors. At least I can only speak for myself, but she really prepped me to sort of be in a place where I was able to be vulnerable and scared every single day and trust my instincts. And, you know, shooting on film was really scary because knowing we only had like a couple takes for something, it kind of brought back this like old school feeling that I hadn't had in a really long time. And, you know, and to be honest, I think Pamela set the precedent she set the standard so high every day because she came to set with literally the entire script memorized. She came out every day and was like vulnerable, scared, and like put her heart on her sleeve every single day. And you could tell that there were times where she was really nervous and scared, but did it anyway. And so when you're working with that sort of leader and you're working that environment, you can't help but also dive in headfirst as well. And I feel like that's, we all were in that place and just willing to do whatever it needed to take to get this done. And I feel like that's why it was such a magical process. But also, I think that's also why we all became so close so quickly, because we were in this like kind of crazy environment where all of us were like nervous. Like we hadn't really, I always say I never get cast in films like this. And we were all doing something that we hadn't done. Jamie was coming off her Oscar win. Like it was chaotic and harmonious all at the same time. And so I think it was all really having each other's support that kind of pulled us through this kind of really intense but beautiful shoot that we had.
Mm-hmm. Also, I want to give props to Dave Bautista in that movie. He gives a really good performance. And like nobody's really talked about that. It's definitely like my favorite performance of his to date.
Oh, he is the most kind and incredible like human being. I got to do a scene that it didn't make the movie, but I got to do this really intense scene with him. And he is such like the biggest teddy bear, like this most sensitive, kind, hardworking person working on this scene. Like he is so talented and willing to do whatever it takes and willing to go there. Like there was a point in time where I was like hitting him. He's like, no, just give it to me. And I was like, this is amazing. And all you ask for as an actor is to have someone who's willing to go there with you, to willing to take those risks, willing to sort of like jump in the deep end together. And it was incredible. He's so great in this movie. And I'm so excited to see like what's to come for him because he really is so good. And also, funnily enough, he came in with that character, like the wig and everything. I thought that he grew out his hair. Like he built this character, he did that and showed up. Like he kind of told Gia, like I don't want to speak for Gia, but I remember him, Gia saying that, like, he's like, oh, I'm going to do a wig. And she's like, okay, well, let's see how it goes. And he came in with a full getup. He built this character. He did all of this work. And it's really incredible. And I really hope that people get to see more in depth what kind of actor he really is. Cause he's really very, very talented.
Mm-hmm. And Lewis brought this up earlier, but you know, I mean, you worked with Gia Coppola on this, and then like your first film was with David Fincher, you know? And so I guess like, what was it like working with Fincher and then also being with current like acting powerhouses like Andrew Garfield and Jesse Eisenberg, but like they were really sort of blowing up with that movie, you know?
That experience was probably one of the most impactful experiences of my life, just coming out of Disney, like figuring out who I was as an actor and then diving in and working with David is one of my favorite directors. Fight Club is one of my favorite books, one of my favorite movies of all time. I've been such a fan, and to work with him was such a dream come true. And he was so incredibly generous with his time, and I feel like I wouldn't be the actor I am today if it wasn't that for that experience. And to work with Andrew and Jesse, who at that time were still on the way up, and even in that moment, you knew they were special. They were so talented and so like just such like it was such an you just knew you were working with incredible actors. And so that was like such a masterclass in acting for me, coming off a Disney show and just feeling like out of, you know, figuring out what I wanted to do and jumping into that was literally such a dream. And Andrew and Jesse were the best. Like they were, you know, we were all so young, like crazy crossroads in our lives. And just, I look back at that experience, I was like, we were just like young kids, like kind of been like, oh, I guess we're making this thing. Like it was just so much fun. I only spent like 10 days on that set, but it was so life-changing for me. And it's hard because that was my first, like, I think, real feature film, and it set the bar so high that I've always been so nervous because like that experience was so incredible. But again, I would not be where I am without that, so I'm just grateful for that experience. I'm like, who gets to, you know, I get to say I was in a Fincher movie. Like that's crazy.
If David Fincher were directing me the entire time, I'd be thinking, this is the man who directed the Vogue video. I mean, like this in his 20s.
Oh, I thought of that too. Don't you think twice? I'm like, this is the man that did like the most iconic Madonna videos. Like, are you kidding me?
Yes, express yourself. Like the best ones. Yeah.
Like on the beach. I see it. The fire. Oh, yeah. 1,000%.
Was there anything that you said he like gave so much time to you and care when like directing you? Is there anything that you like specifically remember him saying, or just like a moment on set that like sort of like switched a gear in your head where you were like, okay, now I feel like a real actor, like I'm off the Disney set?
Well, you know, the thing about David is he loves a real reaction. So, you know, I remember like doing that scene where I confront Andrew and I burn the scar. First of all, funny story, I didn't know how to use a lighter because I was just like, you know, and David had to take me outside to teach me how to use a lighter. So every time I use a lighter, I always think of Fincher taking me outside the lot and like teaching me how to like use a lighter. But, you know, he loves, like, I remember him telling me, like, he put certain things in the room. And for me to really just take a second and look at, you know, crunched up McDonald's, but like things that the audience doesn't really, would never see, like crunched up like McDonald's bags and a Happy Meal box, like, and he goes, just take all that in. And because he wants your natural reaction, but he doesn't tell you this. He just says, take a second look at the room. And I just remember, like, it made me really understand what being in the moment was, and not just worrying about your lines or hitting your mark, but remembering that this is an experience. Like, what is this person going through? And kind of, again, grounding this character. Like, if I was a girlfriend who has been texting and calling my boyfriend, if I saw him, what was the first thing I'd do? I'd be looking around, figuring out, like, it being a crazy PI right away, and just sort of set. And he does that, like, in this sort of gentle way that, like, you don't overthink it. Because I also feel like that's why he does so many takes. He wants to break you out of your habit. Like, you know, he may do 20 takes, and in that, there's 3 takes. But he's like, I remember him just like, trust your instincts. You know what you're doing. Just go and do it. And for me, it was so incredibly helpful, because I feel like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm doing this like huge film with these incredible actors and this, but you just start getting in your head. And when he starts telling you to do it again and again, you have to stop thinking. You have to kind of default to your instincts. And that experience reminded me that I was like, oh no, I know my character. If I've done the work, I should walk in and not, I should be in this moment. And I think that's what it really taught me. And I was like, oh, is this what like acting really is? It's not just about lines and all this stuff. And so I think that's what that experience really showed me. And that scene specifically was just being in the moment and like reacting as naturally and like organically as I would, which is still helpful. And I use that for myself all the time, even now.
Well, Running Point, by the way, is addictive. I watched 3 episodes, like, not even thinking about it. Like, it went down.
Oh, thank you.
It went down in a way that only things like Emily in Paris have gone down historically.
Iconic. Thank you, sir.
It did something to my brain, is what I'm saying. So, congrats on the show. And congrats on your rad marriage and this photo shoot, which, again, I'm peering at, like, just like hearts in my pupils.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
I hope you got it framed. Like, it's such a beautiful, yes.
Oh, no. It's one of the reasons why we did it. Mac likes to joke. We have a mantle. And he's like, we have to do it. It's for the mantle. It's for the mantle, honey. So, yes. No. We're going to get a frame. It'll go on the mantle.
Great. Well, thank you for being here, Brenda. And Running Point is on Netflix now. So, we will be right back with more Keep It.
Thank you.
And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Lewis.
Yes.
What's poppin'?
I can't decide if this is a tradition or not. I think it is. Because it's the Oscars episode, am choosing a historical Oscars moment to say Keep It too. And who knows, maybe I've even picked this exact moment before. But I decided I wanted to do a category where the 5th best thing won and 4 other worthier things lost. And I'm so sorry, because I love her. And nobody has better hair or eyebrows. But today's Keep It goes to Jennifer Connelly and A Beautiful Mind. Absolutely not, sweetheart. loved you in Labyrinth. Loved you on that Snowpiercer show. But she was up against Helen Mirren and Maggie Smith in Gosford Park. Queens, you should already have your fists up. Already, you should be throwing down. Marissa Tomei in The Bedroom. Woof! Drama. Mr. Todd Field. Kate Winslet and Iris. I rest my case. I mean, do you need me to fight? I mean, what was she doing in A Beautiful Mind? John, don't be crazy. Stop it. Get back to the math. Go win a Nobel Prize or whatever he does in that movie. Just not an important performance. And it's also a classic case of the one woman in the movie. You know, Isabella Rossellini syndrome. Was it really good, or was she just the one woman? And you remember the one woman, and you wrote down the one woman because you liked the movie about the men.
T.
Yeah. By the way, Isabella Rossellini at the Oscars wearing a blue velvet gown. Come on. She put it together for us.
Laura Dern holding onto her for dear life.
Yeah, just standing there. Kind of just like looking off to the side. She's like, yeah, I have an Oscar, whatever.
It was sort of like, okay, are we getting a Lynch tribute?
And you would think we would. What happened there?
But it was really just them together.
No, get Mr. Kyle MacLachlan out there. I guess he just did the SAG Awards, so maybe they didn't want to do that twice. But nobody would have complained. We love seeing them all out there.
Let me follow suit with you, actually.
Please.
And talk about my Keep It goes to, I'm going to talk about some classic Oscar as well, but I'm going to talk about The Men. I know we don't really care about The Men, right?
I know. I was shocked to realize that they act recently.
But I feel like when you look at Academy Award for, you know, best actor, you're usually going to get a win from an actor who's in a film that is like, we remember this film, you know, like that, like at least this film was like one of the most important films of the year. You know, we can think of Daniel Day-Lewis with There Will Be Blood. You know, he was up against George Clooney, but like no one is denying that There Will Be Blood. Like that is like a movie.
And a towering acting moment. Yes.
You know, next you have Sean Penn in Milk. And, you know, whatever we think about Sean Penn, like that is his definitive role for me.
I have to agree. It's a shocking performance. It's an amazing performance.
Now, the next year,
Jeff Bridges. Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart.
By the way, his heart wasn't that crazy. I'll say it right here. If you're hanging out with Maggie Gyllenhaal, you seem pretty sane to me.
Does anyone remember the movie Crazy Heart?
I only remember the song The Weary Kind, which won the Oscar that year, T-Bone Burnett. But no, it is a very low-key film and a fine performance. But you're right, I probably wouldn't put it in Jeff Bridges' top five. I would still put The Last Picture Show in his top five. But also, that's just one of the greatest movies, period.
But you've got George Clooney in Up in the Air against him.
You know my problem with that movie. It wants you to think his job is bad. And I think somebody's got to fire people. Sorry. I know that seems corporate or whatever. But if you're good at it, why not?
Also, a movie that could not exist now because he'd just be firing people on Zoom.
Precisely. Oh, no. Excuse me. It would be fully like a Roomba firing these people. Yeah.
They find out they're fired on Twitter.
Yeah. Carla tells them. Yeah.
Colin Firth in A Single Man.
Wonderful performance. And also, definitely the best of, that's Tom Ford, right?
Tom Ford, yeah.
What a shocking film for him to come out with. Julianne Moore is also really good in that movie.
You have Morgan Freeman in Invictus, which is fine, but at least that's better.
Yeah, that movie's only okay, right?
Yeah. And then you have Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker. And honestly, I fucking love The Hurt Locker. And I think he's great in that movie.
It was a worthy best picture. I think, when that one best picture of him was like, oh, phew, thank God. We didn't just give it to Avatar for costing $1 trillion and making $3 trillion.
Yeah. Anyway, Jeff Bridges, keep it.
Just in general. Also, he was so awesome later in Hell or High Water and in the True Grit reboot. I really loved him in. That's one of the great teenager nominations, Hailee Steinfeld. And then I saw her recently and I'm like, wow, you're just like a grown-up supermodel now. Thank God.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I fucking love Jeff Bridges. You know, I think that is just, if I'm looking back at nominations, that is just such a weird anomaly to me because, like you said, it's not even in his top five best performances.
It's sort of like, this is a good performance, but Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour. There are just certain movies where I guarantee we'll never revisit them, even if the skill level is there. You know, a movie can't be that Lily James heavy and be so important. You know what I'm saying? I like the girl.
All right. Well, that's our episode this week.
Yeah, I think we covered everything, unless, you know, I'm still Alicing Best Actress 2014 and I've forgotten stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I did not repeat a keep it from before because I think you know the bitch I'm still mad at for winning an Oscar.
Wait, who?
Who took my girl's Oscar?
Oh, I see. You're mad at Holly Hunter still.
I'm mad at Holly Hunter still. And I love Holly Hunter.
And she played that piano so good and kind of weird.
But we need a matchup again. I need Holly Hunter up against Angela Bassett again. And for Angela to take it.
You know how that quote is circulating of Angela Bassett saying she was worthy the year she lost to Jamie Lee Curtis and she was up for Black Panther Wakanda Forever? I just want to say on Angela Bassett's behalf, her being worthy enough is only half the story. Jamie Lee Curtis was unworthy. That is what should also be said. It was a poor vote by the Oscars community that year.
Yeah. We need Angela Bassett back in some cinema, by the way. That's my other keep it.
That's where she belongs. Yeah.
Yeah, get her out of 911.
Where I'm sure she's being hit with a helicopter right now.
Okay, Halle Berry can put the wig back on and go answer those calls, okay?
By the way, Halle Berry and Adrian Brody making out on the red carpet in reference to that old moment.
Just like I wanted.
I guess it's a sleigh.
I predicted that, but it needed to happen on the ceremony.
Yes, right. There could have been a little planned bit there or something, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, directors. Call Angela Bassett. Sean Baker, get Angela Bassett, please.
Yeah,
somebody.
Right. Good call.
All right. That's our show this week. Thank you to Brenda Son for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review or leaving comments on the YouTube page.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Fortell, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Megan Patzel, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski.
This episode was recorded and mixed by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Thank you to Matt DeGroot, David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America, East. And as always, Keep It is filmed in front of a live studio audience.